Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And together, we make up the official Lions Wire Detroit Lions Podcast. We talk about all things Lions, so that means we have to talk about the 48-17 drubbing to the Jets on Monday night. But before we get to that, we're going to start with the injury news. And number one, I'm back on the board. 1 out of 2 weeks, Ziggy Ansah, shoulder injury, limited Wednesday with the trainers on Thursday.
Yeah, so technically a limited designation for both days. But yeah, not encouraging. Now, just to, you know, I guess clarify this up front, Tuesday was a day off. Wednesday was a walkthrough only. So they estimated, they thought he would be limited. And then on Thursday today, he didn't have his shoulder pads on and spent the time that the media saw with the trainers only. So it's kind of iffy on where he's going to be. It could be they're just giving him a little bit of rest, but the fact that he left the game, didn't return, then they thought he'd be limited, and then he was limited. I don't know. I'm starting to be a little bit more mildly concerned today than I was yesterday about his ability to play. Yesterday it was reported he had an MRI on his shoulder. It revealed that he didn't have any significant damage. So I thought that was a positive step in the right direction. And obviously it is, but I don't know. If he's not ready for this week, that could be a problem for him.
What does Grant Cook say about all this?
Yeah, our buddy Grant had a nice suggestion. He said that new injury designations, instead of just questionable and out, they should have hopeful and prayers appreciated, and just attach those to Ziggy each week. Yeah, depending on where he is, he's either hopeful or, you know, he needs a lot of prayers.
All right. Moving on, TJ Lang in his back. No surprise. TJ also spends a lot of time on the injury report as a Lion.
Yeah, he gets scheduled days off quite a bit. But like I said, with Tuesday off, and then Wednesday in a walkthrough, he then missed today's practice as well. So could just be a veteran's rest like he gets typically, but it could be a little bit more. The fact that he only missed one snap last game is a good indication that he'd probably be able to come back and play this week. Another player that they significantly need in the lineup. He plays a pretty vital role, but 3 days and he hasn't put pads on. Hopefully it's just precautionary.
All right, next up, Andrew Donald with his knee, but he didn't even play Monday anyways.
Yeah, no, he hasn't. He's practiced twice since they picked him up on waivers. Once he was full and he got hurt and then was limited the next day and hasn't practiced since. Not good.
Matthew Stafford, ego and shin.
Yeah, the shin was actually when he got stepped on by Taylor Decker in pass protection in the end zone. So that rib shot that he took is a non-issue. I've seen
Frank Ragnow, big sigh of relief.
The thing that I think gets overlooked sometimes is that the quarterbacks wear added protection for their ribs. They have rib protectors that they wear to...
The flak jacket.
Correct.
The famous flak jacket.
Yep. And so he said it was a non-issue after the game. He said it was a non-issue with Dan Miller on the television the next day. And again, he's been a full participant in practice. So should be no issues with him moving forward, other than maybe just a little bit of soreness.
Oh, he'll gut it out.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, LeGarrette Blount, shoulder.
Yeah, so the fact that he's been a full participant the last couple of days, considering the fact that shoulder injuries are very precarious for running backs, we have to look back at his participation in the game and say, was he benched for a shoulder injury in that game, or was it maybe a performance-based benching? Because he didn't play a lot. He only had 13 snaps and carried the ball 4 times. So
for negative 3 yards.
Right, which is not encouraging. So when he got hurt, we all assumed it was an injury that was keeping him out. But the fact that he's back and going, maybe it's more. Maybe he was benched for performance, which would not be surprising considering that stat line.
All right, even though we're in full-blown regular season mode, there's still transactions. So Quinn's been moving and shaking. Number one, they've been awarded offensive guard Jamil Demby, off of waivers from the L.A. Rams. He was a third-round pick out of Maine.
It was a sixth-round pick out of Maine. I wrote third.
This season.
That's Meyer. Yeah, he was a sixth-round pick out of Maine this past draft. He is a guy who, in a lot of ways, I think Jeff Risnum compared him to Joe Dahl. He is a guy with upside that people are hoping to hit at. The Rams were hoping to sneak him onto the practice squad, which did not happen because the Lions claimed him. So it's encouraging. He's a guy who is strong, very good in pass protection, but he's not very athletic. So doesn't quite fit the mold athleticism of the offensive line that the Lions currently have, but he succeeds in a lot of the areas that the Lions need. So he's a guy who will probably be inactive most of the season, and someone that they kind of sit on and store, and they'll probably keep him on the roster because if they cut him, it's very possible the Rams try and grab him back again. So, yeah, he'll probably be inactive for a while. I think if they cut, it'll be in other places at this point. Could be like a guy like, you know, Donnell if he ever gets healthy.
All right, the Lions also blew out two guys. Number one wide receiver, Bradley Marquez.
Yeah, he was kept on the roster because of his special teams prowess.
Played 18 plays on special teams on Monday.
As the starting gunner. And he did not play well.
No, nobody on special teams did.
And
we can get rid of him. Let him go.
And most of the other guys that play special teams consistently are guys that can play in other areas. And so guys like Charles Washington on a shortened safety depth chart. He has a role. And then with Miles Killebrew, again, you're keeping linebackers in the system. With six receivers, Marquez was clearly a special teams only type guy. And he did not perform up to where he needed to. And so, unfortunately, he was cut loose. He will, I think, he cleared waivers. And so he's a free agent. He can hopefully pick up somewhere else and use that special teams ability to get a job somewhere else.
Wait, I spaced out on this. Who's the other gunner? Is it Agnew?
It's Washington.
Washington.
Yeah. All right. Yep.
All right. And the other guy that's been released, Zach Zenner.
Yeah. Now, Zenner was on IR because he was injured in the fourth game of the preseason. And they came to an agreement on an injury injury settlement, which allows them to release him. Benefit for him, he's now an immediate free agent, can sign anywhere he wants to.
He can rush for 62 yards for some other team.
Benefit for the Lions, they clear almost $1 million in cap space. Yep, he made $925,000, I believe, was what he was scheduled to make. So That's a pretty significant amount of cap space for them.
All right, let's move on to the Jets game. First, we'll talk a little bit about your latest article. Well, it's not your latest article, but your article that you put out right after the game on Monday.
Yep, my post game.
Yeah, your post game, your five takeaways from the Jets game. And you'll be doing this all season, so everybody listening can check that out, although I know most of them already do. Number one was the biggest news across the Lions universe this week, that the offensive play calls were telegraphed to the Jets.
Yeah, and Jimmy asked us a question about that too. He says, you know, he said my daughter, who he talked about as being a very highly intelligent person but not a good football watcher, she was even able to predict where the plays were going. And so he was saying, isn't this a problem? And it was a problem. I think very clearly, based on what we saw transpire, it was a problem. The third quarter, just the recognition and from Darren Lee and the other defensive players on the Jets, the way that they were able to ascertain what was going on, and they said post-game, I actually said that after my article came out, that they were able to, they knew the hand signals. And so knowing the hand signals can be good, but it can be bad. And you know, there's an easy way to throw the defensive players off by putting out a hand signal and then running a different play. But apparently, it's very possible that they didn't change their hand signals either from the preseason or from last year. And if that's the case, that's a huge oversight on the part of Jim Bob Cooter and Matthew Stafford, for that matter. But They said they knew the hand signals, they knew when the check, how the checks were going, and they knew based on what Stafford was doing, based on formation and hand signals, they knew where what the play was designed to do, and that allowed them to be in the right spot at the right time. And yes, that is concerning. That is a problem to Jimmy's point that they should that shouldn't happen at the NFL. And we can recall that it happened 3 years ago with Lombardi, when Lombardi was the OC, and they the Denver game, they talked about how they said to Golden Tate, "We know what you're doing," based on hand signals and formations, and that was part of the reason Lombardi was fired. And if they didn't change the hand signals, that's a fireable offense. And so that firmly puts Jim Bob Cooter on the hot seat.
And the crosshairs, another scapegoat that's not a Bob Quinn disciple. I've heard all of this. This works for their narrative. Great. Now, I disagree with... Well, it's not a disagreement with you, because you said this is a problem.
Yeah, it is
a problem. No, this is great for Jimmy's daughter. Because, A, if Jimmy's daughter got into football... If the coach is like, "Hey, what do you think she should play? What do you think she'd be interested in?" She's got to be a linebacker. All the greats could read and react off of one step of the offense. Well, I want Jimmy's daughter in the middle of the defense.
look at
anchoring it,
and that transcends to what the
read and react.
And look in the fourth preseason game when Chris Spielman, another middle linebacker, was talking about, he was calling the plays in the booth. Remember the Browns game? And like he was saying, based on LeGarrette Blount's, the way he's lined up, the way his feet are positioned, the way that the distance he is from the quarterback, these are all indicators that it's going to be either a run or a pass. And he was calling that out in the preseason. And if he's calling that out and Jimmy's daughter is calling it out, and I could see it up in the booth and, I mean, up in the press box, obviously the Jets are going to figure this out too. So that's got to change. And the Lions did say this week that those will get changed this week. But they also said they change them every week. It's part of their process. So, but I think this could be a bigger problem than just changing a hand signal or two. I think this could be. Yeah. And so we'll have to see how this goes moving forward. But
excuse me.
Yes, I do think it does put. It does make Jim Bob an easy scapegoat, and I think I'm sure we're going to get questions about that as we go on.
We will get
obviously.
To that. Let's yes. hold on. We'll round back to this one. All right, number two, Quandre Diggs living up to his contract, also earning a gold star on his report card, getting the NFL quote way to play unquote award.
Yeah, so Diggs got that big pick six right off the bat, which got everybody excited, and then the
lid almost blew off the stadium.
Funny story, I'm sitting next to Pride of Detroit, next to me, Jeremy, and Jeremy was very excited.
Name dropping.
And he had a very audible, loud noise.
A shrill?
I wouldn't say it was a shrill. It was very manly.
Okay, it was manly. Shriek. It wasn't high-pitched.
But no, but he was very excited. And it was funny because it was like not 2 minutes prior to that, we were just warned about, everyone in the press box was warned about.
Professionalism.
Yeah. But you know what? He's not alone. In the Giants game in the preseason, the first pass, I yelled, "He's throwing it to the wrong guy." And that was I did the same thing. So we're learning our things.
Yeah, but you got to grow into it.
But we were, yes, that was a very exciting play. I was super excited as well. It was neat to see that happen. It was neat to see Diggs do that. But Diggs' play went beyond that. I thought he had a lot of nice positional plays. He had good coverage. He spent a lot of time on the field. And this Way to Play Award is a new award that they're handing out this year based on different players showing professionalism and tactical prowess and how to execute certain aspects of their position. For a defensive back, it's about understanding what's happening in front of him and then being able to click and close and wrapping up and tackling the proper way. And so with all the helmet rules and stuff like that, it's no surprise that they picked a player who tackled appropriately. And they used a play to highlight that he made where it was a big hit over the middle, but it was a legal hit based on the way that he moved his head out of the way. He didn't lower it. He moved his head, lowered his shoulder, and executed a proper play. And that's what the NFL is looking for in its players. And so he was acknowledged for that. So it's been a nice couple of weeks for Quandre Diggs. Lots of playing time, new contract, and some NFL recognition from the top.
All right, number three. Although I'd say you wrote this one incorrectly, if I had to be critical of you.
Yes.
Because you call it, where did the run game go? If you extract the preseason, which is meaningless.
Right.
And I would change the title of this to, why is the running game the same? 15 carries, 39 yards, paltry 2.6 yards per carry, if I did the math right in my head.
That's a fair title change there. I put it, where did the run game go? Because they were averaging over 4 in the preseason. And based on all the investments that they put into the run game, and based on the preseason results, that was one of the things that stood out positively during the preseason. So I was looking at it as why that was a one positive that definitely did not carry over. And so that's why I went with where did it go. And it didn't go. For a lot of reasons, it didn't go. And we'll get into them as we go throughout. But it had everything to do with offensive line push. It had everything to do with running back execution. The guys that they put in position to run certain plays was a bit staggering to me. So there was a lot of things that went into them not being successful. And then the fact that they went away from it when they got in a hole. So a lot of problems with that run game. Hopefully something they can correct moving forward.
All right, number four. Galladay is going to be a weapon. 7 catches, 114 yards. Once again, something we saw at the end of last season, out-snapping Golden Tate. And also looking like the best Lions wide receiver Monday.
Yeah, he actually out-snapped Marvin Jones as well, which is a bit of a surprise. But Galladay looked strong across the board. He did have a drop, but so did Marvin Jones, and so did Golden Tate, and so did TJ Jones.
Ugh.
Right? There's a lot of drops. And that was that you know, that I don't want to, what do I say, in sharpness, that inability to be sharp was very noticeable throughout the preseason and now.
Did you say inability?
inability to be sharp. I might have. Yeah. I'm still tired. Galladay looks strong. Look, that hit that he made after the interception that he hit, caused the fumble, and then recovered the fumble himself. That was impressive. Like, after Matt Stafford threw the interception to, I'm blanking on the cornerback's name, but Galladay delivers that big hit to jar that ball loose, and then was it Claiborne's interception? I don't think it was Claiborne. It was Tremaine Johnson. It was Tremaine Johnson's interception. So yep. once he got that, you know, I thought across the board, Galladay had one of the better days. Him and Diggs were in my top three positives from this game.
All right. Finally, we talked about this a little bit. Special teams, major weakness. I don't even know if we have to really talk about it. Anybody who watched the game saw the special teams were a major weakness.
Right, in all phases. Kickoff returns, punt returns, and field goals.
Mm-hmm.
All struggled. Even Prater missed twice, which is unusual.
Yeah,
it's
unusual. It was an indicator.
Yeah, well, the bad snap on the 56-yarder was, of course, that could happen. But the 44, he doesn't miss from 44 that often. I think, in my personal opinion, they were down so much that I don't think Prater was expecting to be called upon to go for that.
It's professional. He needs to be ready.
No,
called upon.
I understand, but he's not a backup quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, the kickers are quirky.
He is a weird guy.
Kickers are, and so they.
No offense to any kickers listening, but you are weird.
I used to be a kicker. I used to kick. I used to play wide receiver and kicker. That's as weird as that is. But
it's not weird. Pat Summerall did that when he played in the NFL. All right, let's move on.
I don't think he was mentally prepared for that 44-yarder, but that's still, he's been doing this long enough. I was surprised he missed it.
All right, let's talk really quickly about the snap count distribution. First off, with the running backs, we saw not an even mix, really heavily towards Theo Riddick,
the
feature guy.
It was almost,
but we're playing from behind.
Yeah.
So he's going to be out there.
Yeah, and Noah Mir, right off the bat, was a bit shocking.
He was inactive.
Yep.
But you got to make like 8 guys inactive. So,
well, I feel like when Blunt went down, that Theo took all of Theo's snaps and all of Blunt's snaps, which is a bit surprising because I thought Kerryon would have got Blunt's snaps, which wasn't the case.
No, he only got 16 snaps.
Yeah, and less than 10 touches. And that is concerning, considering he's probably the best running back they have.
Yeah, he looked good in the preseason, but once again, doesn't matter.
Right. And so I would hope they give him a shot more moving forward.
All right. Tight end distribution even. It's not good.
Yeah, the fact that it's
Levine Tololo, 20 snaps, led the way. I don't know. Nobody's too shocked by this.
The fact that they're splitting them even amongst the four and none of them stood out is concerning. And I know we've all had concerns about the tight ends going, but none of them stepped up and none of them really found won any snaps. I think that even distribution was because nobody really came through. I thought the tight end position could arguably been the weakest group of a positional group that the Lions had.
Top three wide receivers, all over 80% of snaps. That's not a surprise.
Nope, that's going to be standard moving forward.
All right, offensive line starters all played at least 69 of the 70 snaps, with Kenny Wiggins getting the other one. Tyrell Crosby did not make it out on the field at all, although he was dressed.
Yep.
Ziggy Ansah, when he was not out there, they were using Kerry Hyder and Eli Harold, but Eli Harold only got out there for 9 snaps.
Yep.
And
they only used him when they went to like that kind of nickel pass-heavy defense, because when they go to that...
No, he's probably a little undersized to be at that position if they're at running downs.
And typically, it's you know when they go to that kind of NASCAR front where...
I'm not in love with that.
But when they do that, Hyder pushes inside. And so when Hyder pushes inside, they need another edge guy, and Harold is the reserve for the edge guy. That could be a position I see Okwara stepping up into.
Worth noting, remember, if everybody listened last week, Okwara is the player that basically replaces
Anthony
Zettel on the roster, inactive on Monday, but he was brand new to the team.
Yeah.
Doesn't really know anything.
All the new guys were inactive.
All right. Ricky Jean-Francois and Sly Williams played over 75% of the snaps, defensive tackle. Deshaun Hand over 50%.
And that's surprising because both of Ricky Jean and Williams, those are guys that played half of those typically in last year's season. So that
that's not a good sign because they're going to tire out quickly as the season wears out.
Well, and I think that might be a reason why we see Ashawn active next week.
All right, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, Christian Jones, both on the field about 45% of the time, which is a little higher than maybe what we've expected, but...
Well, what we saw was we saw Devin Kennard out there for almost 100, just under, 97%. We saw Jared Davis out there, same thing, 58 snaps, 97%. And then we saw Christian Jones and Maybin cycling through.
So we saw a lot of three linebackers.
Correct. And we're going to, because we're seeing three down linemen and three linebackers. And that's pretty standard. There wasn't like a clear will starter. I thought that the fact that they used both of them pretty equally was good.
All right, Nevin Lawson, 56 snaps. Jalen Tease-Tabor, only 2. Agnew, with 23, was the primary replacement in the defensive secondary.
Yeah, when Slay went down with the concussion, it was Agnew who came on the field, not Tabor. That was a bit of a surprise.
All right, Quandre Diggs basically played the whole game. Tavon Wilson, what is that, 3/4, maybe 80%? And
just under, yeah.
Glover, only 40 of the 59 plays, so
right.
2/3.
Which is a bit surprising, and maybe he got some rest there at the end because it was a blowout, but I do think he's kind of getting phased out, kind of a changing of the guard possibly, where Diggs is going to be the guy on the field more often.
All right, let's go to the questions. First, from Sweta Patel. Will we ever see the blue jersey, blue pants combo again in a home game?
Nope.
I hope not.
Nope, I think it's done.
I only like when they wear the blue pants and the Homer Simpson look with the blue pants, white jersey. All right. Eric J. Masson, simple question, is it as bad as it looked? Yeah, well, sure. Yes, 17-17 after the second half, the first drive of the second half. But a mess after that. If a team wins 4 games or less with Stafford playing all year, you have to remove Bob Quinn and Patricia. No way they can go 9-7 2 years in a row and then be a dumpster fire.
Yeah. Now, I don't think they're a 4-win team.
Well, I think Eric's just making a point here.
Sure.
If they are a four-win team, sure. if this is what happens, now go back into what you're saying about how you don't feel they're a four-win team.
It's one game, and I know we all, and I know a lot of people are hitting the panic button, and I'm not saying Eric is here, because like he said, we were tied at the half, and coming out, or just after the first drive of the half.
Yep.
So basically, most of the panic here and most of what we are like upset about is the third quarter. It was one of the worst quarters of play I've ever seen in my life. Now, granted, there were bad things leading up to that. Stafford going 0-for-4 in the first
quarter. Yeah, so we didn't see any improvement there over last year.
But, you know, Stafford, he came back after that. But, yes, the first quarter is, again, they started very, very, very poorly. So I think the game was bad, but I don't think this is the team that we will see. I think there's too much talent on this offense for them to produce at this level again. I think the defense is a learning curve, and they are going to have to do a lot. And we've talked about the fact that we expected the defense to start slow, especially the first like 6 weeks going into the bye. We expected them to struggle, and I do still expect them to struggle. They weren't put in a lot of bad spots by the offense, but this is a team that's carried by the offense. And if the offense struggles, and they struggled mightily in that second half, this is they have the potential to look this bad again. But it's all about the offense, really. And the talent is there on the offense for them not to look as bad. So is it as bad as they looked? It shouldn't be moving forward. I would be surprised if we have another game this bad. The offense really imploded, and I just, there's so much talent. I don't know, see how that could happen again moving forward, or
and
should happen.
Eric, though, to answer your question, is it as bad as it looked? Well, yeah, they played bad.
It was, but I mean, if he's asking, is it as bad as it looked? Is this
in general?
Are they as bad as they looked on Monday night? I don't think the team is as bad as they looked. No. But I think there are a lot of big problems exposed.
You could have also cited last year when they laid an egg against Baltimore. That team still went 9-7.
Sure.
A lot of it's okay for everybody to be upset. It's one game.
Well,
let's see where we go for here.
And I'll make one more note on this, is that Patricia's defense last year in New England gave up 42 points in the opening game.
Yeah, but all right.
And they,
all right.
I'm just saying.
No, that's fair. It's very fair.
He's seen this happen, so he should have some way. He should have some knowledge and experience on how to correct something like this.
All right, Al Stahl, did week one drastically change your season outlook? I know what your answer is. No.
It is no.
It's not mine either, but are you still expecting 8 wins or so?
Mm-hmm.
You were yes, and I wasn't there in the first place. So we had a chat about that.
I still think they're a middle-of-the-road team that is capable of having a bad game like they did, but also capable of doing the same thing to somebody else.
All right, Jacob Reed. I heard a report on NFL Network that a lot of vets had a problem with the amount of new rules that Patricia implemented. How much truth is there to this, and what are these rules?
Look, basically, everyone complains about their job. Everyone. When Joe comes over, the first half hour.
All I do, I just complain about. Great, I have a bunch of coworkers that listen to this.
No, I complain about all the stuff that I have going on for the first half hour that Joe comes over every week. Joe does not complain about his job. But everybody else, everybody complains about their job. That's just what it is. And when you have a shift in management, there's going to be a change, and people are not going to like it. Caldwell was a guy who was considered a player's coach. Patricia is not necessarily a player's coach. But if we look at the guys who signed in this offseason, they signed to play with him. They signed because they liked Patricia. There's a lot of guys that came over from New England because they liked what he had. There's a different style of coaching right now, and that is going to breed uncomfortableness, and that's going to breed people being disruptive. But these reports from the NFL Network are based off of an agent telling an NFL Network guy one piece of information, and then the NFL Network guy ran with it. And it's an agent of one player on the Lions, and the NFL Network turned it into all of the veterans on the Lions are unhappy. And this has been a ongoing story that stemmed from a they're running too much type of thing. And when you're losing, these are the types of stories that people want to talk about, because but this is something that happens in all the locker rooms. So if they start winning, these things go away. So we're talking about this now just because they looked horrible and gave up a terrible loss. If they would have won that Jets game, this would have been a non-issue.
All right, Jason Hatch, Glover Quinn's comments on not everyone being happy. I'm sure that's true for every team, but does it concern you that he came out and said it publicly? These players are saying all sorts of things publicly now. Look at Le'Veon Bell's teammates. I don't hear other teams saying that about coaches.
No, but again, he's asked something specific, and he is a guy who isn't shy, and he's upright, upfront and honest and with the reporters. And Ricky Jean Francois kind of said the same sort of thing before we knew, like, you know, before we started really, the reporters started really getting into this. But I'm not concerned about him saying it publicly. I just think that speaks to his... He's not shy about being honest with people, and that's, I think, something we should commend him for, as opposed to you know, trying to read into it too much. I'm still not over. I'm not worried that he said anything publicly, and I think that this is a story that's really blown up because, like I said, got to get those W's.
All right,
we got Jamie's question. Let's do the preview.
Yeah, we're gonna hit the preview, but I was just gonna say, like, if the players played that way, mm-hmm. is some sort of statement to Patricia, mm-hmm. you know, and I've heard that a little bit. I don't think that could be true, because these players in the end have to get a job with another team,
right.
and they don't want to have that on their video. Anyhow, right. moving on. I'm not even going to give that too much. I just wanted to add that.
Sure.
All right, talk a little bit about the San Francisco 49ers. This game is oozing of NFL royalty nepotism. This is the former team of Jim, son of Jack Harbaugh. This is now the team of Kyle, son of Shanahan, coach of the Broncos. What was his first name? Mike Shanahan. Son of Mike Shanahan. The game is being reffed by Ed Hockley's son, Sean, and Tom, how about some Tostitos, Coach Brenneman, and Chris Spielman on the mic for Fox.
Yep.
Unsurprisingly, Niners by 5.5 in Vegas.
Yeah, and it was a lot closer than that until, and then when the Lions got blown out.
It's going to move towards the Niners, yeah, that's for sure.
Shanahan runs a high tempo offense. He actually calls the plays as well as being a head coach. They're going to try and push the run first, but they like to set you up with play action. They will use their running backs in a lot of different situations. They'll even put their fullbacks out. Out in the slot and stuff. They've got a good fullback in Kyle Juice. Oh gosh, I always mess his name up.
Juszczyk or
yeah,
whatever.
Juszczyk, right? Mm-hmm. He is. He's kind of more of H-back than he is
for
a fullback.
All of you listening to us massacre the name. It's the guy with all the Z's on the back of his jersey,
right? But they use him in a lot of different ways. So. They used all their running backs in a lot of different ways. They had Jerick McKinnon as their starting running back, but he went on IR. So then they've gone to a hot hand situation with Matt Breida and Alfred Morris, as well as their fullback. They split them 12 touches each last game, and you know, neither one really did a whole lot. But overall, they produced better than the Lions running backs did. That's for sure. So Alfred Morris was the closest one to scoring, but he fumbled at the goal line, if any of you watched them play against the Vikings. But the real storyline here is Jimmy Garoppolo, coming from the Patriots, where Matt Patricia knew him for all of that time. And he had lots of nice things to say to him. But, you know, Jimmy Savior here is the guy that, you know, they're really going to have to watch out for, because Shanahan's offense is really built around him. Now, he's an aggressive passer.
Very Stafford-like, 261 yards, one TD, three interceptions on Sunday.
Yep, he's strong, he's athletic, but he's a rhythm guy. So if they can disrupt his rhythm, then that's going to help them be more successful.
Ladies say he's good-looking, too.
Yeah, I hear that as well. And so Garoppolo is really the guy that they need to be worried about. At receiver, they've got Pierre Garçon, who only caught two balls last week. Marquise Goodwin, the former Olympian. And he left the game with a quad injury, and he's questionable for this week right now. We'll see if he returns. In his place was rookie, second-round rookie Dante Pettis.
Isn't that a former Major League center fielder Gary Pettis' son? There you go.
That's absolutely right. Pettis went only two catches as well, but he had a couple nice ones, ended up with 61 yards, and had a beautiful touchdown. Trent Taylor is their slot guy. He went 4 of 6. And then the big weapon, though, was George Kittle. Their tight end units with Garrett Celek and George Kittle are a real problem. Cole Wick is their third one.
Yeah, former Lion.
Right? But Kittle is going to be the real problem. Kittle went 5 of 9 for 90, but he also dropped an 80-yard touchdown and another one in the end zone that went over his head that there was no one near him and Garoppolo just straight missed him. He could have had 7 of 9 for 200 yards and 2 scores. I mean, it would have been that easy for him to do that. He dominated the Vikings. And with the Lions, he is going to be the problem. So that's where we got to watch. We got to watch for Kittle. He is going to be the weapon.
All right, so the offensive line. Central Michigan zone, Joe Staley. Former Lion, Lakin Tomlinson. Former, what a lot of fans wanted to target as a center, Weston Richburg.
From the Giants.
The very generically named Mike Person at right guard. And first round draft pick, Mike McGlinchey out of Notre Dame at right tackle.
Yeah, and then Pearson got hurt and then was replaced by Josh Garnett. And then Josh Garnett got hurt and they were replaced by Gary Gillum, who was their right tackle. Both Pearson and Garnett are not supposed to be guys that might not play, so we might not see them at all. Lakin is not – we all remember Lakin Tomlinson, right? So with a out-of-place position at the right guard and Lakin at left guard, the tackles – or the guards are the way to attack this team. But as we saw last week, the Lions are not strong up in that middle. So hopefully they can create stunts and blitzes and find ways to pressure those guards, because that's the way to get Jimmy Garoppolo, is to pressure him up the middle, get him out of the pocket, and then try and use guys to contain him.
All right, on the defensive line, on the outside, they have Solomon Thomas and Eric Armstead. And inside, where we're going to have some problems, DeForest Buckner from Oregon. Football makes sense to me again, because I always thought he was going to make a pretty decent pro, and now he's delivering on that.
Yep.
And Earl Mitchell.
Yeah, and Buckner, he had 2.5 sacks last week, and he'll likely match up against Ragnow. So this will be the second week in a row where Ragnow was tasked with facing really the best player on the defensive line. So he's a guy to watch. Thomas is no joke, neither is Armstead, but Buckner is their shining star. And so it'd be a big challenge for the guys up front, for the offensive line.
In the middle, Reuben Foster, suspended, gone.
Yep.
So we're going to see a rookie third rounder, Fred Warner, in the middle.
Yeah, out of BYU, he was a former safety turned linebacker. And he had a bit of a struggle, even though he's a good player. I think he'll be good down the road. It might be a little early in his career for him.
Hopefully the running game or our tight ends take advantage of this.
Well, it gets better when you look outside.
Outside, they have Malcolm Smith, because he didn't play in week one with hamstring injury, and Mark Nziocha, who I may have never heard of.
And with Smith not playing, they played Brock Croyle.
Brock, don't call me Brody Croyle.
And he had one of the worst grades on PFF this week, and then he ended up on IR. So they replaced him with Dakota Watson, who is also hurt and injured, and then they picked up another guy off the free agent wire, and he's a guy who's, I think, started 4 games in the last 5 years, and he might be starting for them. So linebackers, if you can get past that first line of defense with the 49ers, their back 7 is exploitable. And that is good news if you're looking to get an offense, let's say, I don't know, back on track.
All right, in the back 4, we got old but still useful Richard Sherman and Akello Witherspoon at corner.
Akello's an ascending player. I like him. He's still young. He's only in his second year. Sherman is, like you said, old, but he's really smart and savvy. But I think both of them will have problems with Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones, and especially if you try and run these guys. So hopefully they will create some stuff inside and then try and get someone matched up on Golden. Could be a good day for Golden.
All right, and in the middle of the field, in the defensive backfield, we got Jaquiski Tartt and Adrian Culver. Jaquiski Tartt sounds like a delicious dessert.
He's a good player. I like him. He might even be their best defensive back, but still, they're beatable in the secondary, and those linebackers are a little bit rough. So you can hold those front four. The Niners' defense can be exposed.
All right, finally, kicker, well-known, Robbie Gould.
Yep, it doesn't matter.
Or Gold.
It is what it is.
Yeah. All right, moving on to quick. Man, we're banging around the podcast desk today. Chris Online asks, I think Stafford will throw four touchdowns this week to restore the balance in the universe. Do you agree?
Well, I'd hope so. I'm hoping.
I don't think he's going to.
Four's a lot, but... Yeah, so I would take the under on that, but I still think he's ready for a bounce back game.
All right, the next question, not a question, but a statement. From Scott Bates, please don't answer any questions of if the Lions should get rid of Stafford. I've had enough of that. Yeah, we're not going to talk.
There's a lot of
that range.
Yeah, no, a lot of Stafford haters came out of the woodwork this week. We won't address that.
All right, Robert Wedge, Greg Warren, and Tim all had similar Jim Bob Cooter questions. And in a nutshell, Jim Bob Cooter is a built-in scapegoat. Yep, works great for Bob Quinn's narrative.
Yep.
If the offense continues to sputter, how long will he last? And you're saying he's going to make it to the bye week.
Yep, I've said that for a while now, right? I said if he ends up going, they won't cut him before the bye.
If he is cut loose, who are the in-house options to replace him?
George Godsey makes the most sense, the quarterback's coach. He's a former offensive coordinator at Houston. But Davidson, the offensive line coach, is another former offensive coordinator as well. So they have two in-house options. I would think they would lean more towards Godsey, though.
If he is let go, who are the long-term replacement options? This one's surprising.
Yeah, it's hard because it's hard. You're looking at guys that are not coordinators on other teams, so it's hard to really get a good feel for that, and I haven't really looked into it that much. The only name that really popped out to me is Dan Campbell, the former Lions tight end, who was part of that Parcells coaching tree that all of the Lions staff is really a part of now, I guess. He's an assistant head coach and tight ends coach with the Saints right now, but as we remember, he took over in Miami and was their head coach and actually did some good things for them. He could be a guy who they could look at. I think I've heard good positive things about him.
Plus, he has interim head coaching experience.
Right.
We might need that.
not for a while.
All right, Jeremy, why did Kerryon get less than 10 touches?
That's an excellent question. I don't have any answer to that. I think it's probably just because he's a rookie and they're trying to build trust with the rookie. And as Joe said, they were behind, so they put Theo out there a lot. But I think he should get more than that.
Walker Kelly, I know how you're going to answer this one. Are you a believer in Kerryon Johnson?
I am. I think he's the best running back that they have, and I think his role will grow. Hopefully, they will recognize that it should probably grow sooner than later.
Mary Lamos, do you know why Amir Abdullah was inactive for the game on Monday? I was under the impression that he was part of the plan to improve the running game.
I was under that impression as well, and I thought that they would be using a four-back system. And then when Blunt went down, it made Amir's inactive even more glaring. And so I don't know. I think the only thing I can think of is what Joe pointed out at the beginning was that you have to cut guys somewhere. You have to make seven guys inactive every week. And when with them trying to keep extra, like Brandon Powell, he takes up a skill position spot, and then that means you have to lose the skill position guy somewhere else. It looks like it was Amir that week. So I don't think they were planning on running that much. Therefore, he moves away. And I guess he's probably low guy on the totem pole. I think that was pretty obvious.
All right, Kyle, can you rank the starters on the O-line based on their performance from last game? Who had the best blocking performance and who had the most missed assignments? Can you see them cleaning up the issues on a short week where they travel out west?
I mean, it's always possible to clean these things up. But the best blockers were, it's probably right between Lang and Wagner. Lang and Wagner both look sharp, so you could go towards either one of them. But with Lang ailing, it is concerning. I think that would make things really hard as far as cleaning up issues. So I'd say Lang and Wagner were probably 1A, 1B for the best blocking. I thought Decker looked good in pass protection, but he struggled in his run blocking. That was part of the problem up front.
But the interior, we had some problems. Glasgow and Ragnow both struggled. And then, like I said earlier, Ragnow had a very difficult matchup against Leonard Williams. So he would probably be the guy that missed the most assignments. He had the toughest responsibility. He'll have the toughest responsibility again this week. And I think Glasgow really needs to be conscious of that and be able to help him. But Glasgow didn't – he's good, but he didn't have the best performance ever. So I think if we can shore up the communication with Ragnow and Glasgow, get them improving their game a little bit, get Lang back healthy, then, yeah, you can make some of these moves going forward. But unfortunately, the rookie had a tall task, and he struggled.
Lions 99, first question. Who bears more responsibility in the terrible defensive showing so far through preseason in week one? The players themselves or the way Patricia has slash hasn't had them ready? This is the most concerning thing to me.
I think it's both. I think, I mean, the players are missing assignments. And they talked about that after the game. Ricky Jean talked about the fact that he knows what he's supposed to do, and he still picked the wrong gap. He said, "I've done this play on the big 60-yard run that the Browns had in the second half." He said, "I know my assignment was the B gap. I knew where I was supposed to be. I'm in the B gap every time, and I didn't pick the B gap." And he broke, and he went right through the B gap. And he's like, "I can't do that." So there's obviously some problems with the players, and they're making mistakes. But the coaches are having some problems implementing their part too. They need to be, you know, there's a lot of problems, and you could even add in that the talent on defense isn't as good as it needs to be either, which you could blame Bob Quinn for that as well. So I think there's a lot of blame to go around. So I can't pin it on one person.
Well, I don't know. I'd put a lot of it on Patricia because they have not been ready at all for five games, including the four preseason games. All right. Is it safe to say that A'shaun Robinson is one of the players that's not buying in considering his lack of playing time?
I don't think that he's not buying in. I just think he's not performing. I think he's
not. Or he
got
too fat.
You should see him dance in the locker room after practice.
Maybe it doesn't translate to the football field.
Oh, it's
not. It'll translate to Dancing with the Stars, but not to the gridiron.
Unfortunately, another surprise inactive with Robinson, and he has been on the decline, which is disappointing.
I agree with Big Drew on 96.1, West Michigan radio station, that Stafford having a new baby along with toddler twins is most likely tiring him at least a little bit and probably affecting his daily routine, as anyone with young kids can attest to. Do you agree? I'm very interested in your answer.
I don't.
All right, good, because I don't either. I think that is an absolutely ridiculous stance to take on it.
But you know what? There's a lot of people that... I had a lot of people ask me questions like this.
Okay. Me and you, yeah. And I don't have any kids, so that, sure. I don't count, but I'm a regular person, kind of. And there's all sorts of other regular people out there who are parents, who have young children and toddlers.
Yes.
You know what they don't have?
Nannies.
A team of nannies.
Yes.
And a giant mansion to live in.
Yes.
Like, he can spend as much time at night when he needs to get his rest or needs to focus as far away from those kids as possible, and they're taken care of. They're not being neglected in any way. This is the same that the Serena Williams thing, and I don't want to get too deep into that. It's like, oh, she's a new mother. It's like, okay, she's fine. Like, yes. Other people are watching. She's not mothering that kid when she's out on the tennis court or getting ready for these matches.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
But this is not a... this is a question that I've heard a lot, and I've had people...
Let's put it to bed right now. We can't take that as an excuse.
I don't think that is the case. I get why that could be. As
it's
a parent,
offensive to parents.
No,
it's offensive to regular
parents.
No,
but I get. Look, I got 7 hours. I slept for 1 hour after the Monday Night Football game because of my kids. My kid woke up at 1 hour after I got home from Monday Night Football, and so I get that it's exhausting. But he makes enough money where he's got nannies.
Yeah. We got to blow past that. Or Gary Luke, what happens next with A'shaun Robinson? Deshaun Hand looked good. How do you see his role developing this year?
I think he's the fourth defensive end or defensive tackle until he changes something up. Right. Deshaun Hand is way better than him right now.
Scott Anderson, if Ziggy is hurt, do you see them bringing in someone to fill his spot, or they'd be looking to do that anyways? Well, only in the offseason.
I don't think you're going to get anybody at this point. You've got what you've got.
All right. Do you think Jared Davis looked any better in that game than he did in the preseason?
Yes. I thought he looked better. I think he gets sold out a lot on things. For example, there was that one big third down that he got blamed for. He was in zone coverage, and if he was in man, that was his guy. But he passed it off like he was supposed to, and I think he gets sold off. I mean, look, he's not a good man coverage guy. But if the coaches keep putting him in man coverage, that's going to be more the coach's fault. I thought he was improving a little bit.
How much did you love Kenny Dalladay's hit and fumble? We kind of talked about it. You loved it.
Yeah, it was real good.
It's great. Jay Borders, why isn't Tabor on the field more?
Because he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not playing at a level that he's supposed to be at. And if you're not playing at a level you're not supposed to be at, you're not going to get the field. Look, A'shaun Robinson. You know what I mean? That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter if you're picked in the second round. If you don't do what you're supposed to, you don't see the field.
Aaron Thompson asks, should we be concerned about Sam Martin after the team worked out punters this week, or is it just another case of due diligence by the team?
It's due diligence, and I know.
I might be slightly concerned.
Yeah,
because he wasn't great last year.
Well, and his punt average, his hang time was not great. I think it was 20th in the league the last week. So it's not super great. And he can be faulted for some of the problems on special teams, but you're not going to find a guy
right now.
Oh, okay. you're going way back now. But I don't think he should be concerned. I think he shouldn't be any more concerned than he was previously.
Brad Rollins, top two additions that can return Lions special teams to a powerhouse.
Well, okay, Don Carey was just in for a workout. He would be a nice addition, but really it's just going to be more addition by subtraction. You lose a guy like Marquez who struggled, and then hopefully you can find his replacement. You got to find somebody next to Charles Washington. Is that going to be Tracy Walker? Is that going to be maybe they activate Brandon Powell, and Brandon Powell steps up into that? Or maybe DeVergen, the guy that they got off of waivers 2 weeks ago, is a guy who could step up. Or maybe it's a guy on the practice squad who warrants a move up to the 53-man roster. So I think it's just going to be a matter of finding their right combinations. But as far as adding someone, like we just talked about, there aren't a lot of options out there. Don Carey might be the best, and he might not be even able to.
I Should Mute Myself asks, how do you feel about Bob Quinn's overall performance as GM so far?
This is too long for the time we have. We kind of talked about this last week. I think he gets the...
He's very clever.
He's
good at writing a story that keeps him getting fired quickly.
Right? But I mean, we're getting lost. If we lose, these are the types of questions.
We'll see more of them. Yeah.
If he loses again next
week, we're slowly getting to where it's warranted. Yeah.
If they lose again next week, then we'll talk about that. How about that?
All right, Brandon Kerr, this is a discussion. I'll say one really short thing about that. How about that? Is that okay?
Yep, quick.
All right, for discussion, and maybe we'll save this for another time. Since Stafford started in 09, he is 3-8 in his road openers with the 3 wins. And 11 in Tampa, 16 in Indy, 17 in New York. In 15 and 16, the Lions play 2 road openers each year for a combined 1-3 record. Thoughts? I don't know. Hard to win on the road in the NFL, period. If you look at this on a micro level, Stafford struggles early in games, so it should be no surprise he struggles at the beginning of the season. And a macro level, that's it. I know that's my only thoughts on it.
It's a winnable game, and they could make this 3 years in a row, right? Before we sign off, though, we got to do score predictions.
Oh, let's do a score.
So we kind of skipped over that. I think you want to go first?
Yeah, what sure. San Francisco 31, the Lions 17. They won't look as bad as they did this week.
I'm going to flip it around, and I'm going to say 31-24, Lions come back.
Who won last week?
I'm sure it was you.
Oh, yeah, this because I had it as a closer score.
Yeah, right? We'll do the numbers after.
We'll catch up.
But I'm pretty sure you got out to a 1-0 lead. So you got San Francisco. I will take the Lions. I think they need to bounce back. And we'll see how that goes.
Now, no shout-outs this week.
Nope.
And the Lions played so terribly that we lost a rating. Not that a rating turned from a 5.0 to a 1.0. It's just gone.
Somebody extracted it.
Maybe they went on the old term on the radio station, Lions Free, and they had to pull their rating off of our show. It's possible.
Well, I think maybe if they delete an account, that would take it away as well.
That's probably what will do it.
Right.
But we thank them for listening. It's too bad we've lost them. But to the rest of you who are listening currently, thank you for doing so. We didn't get as angry as maybe you thought, but it's a long season, so we'll see where we go from here.
Look, if they lose this week, then we'll start foreshadowing.
Yeah, then we're going to say it's only two games, and then we know. All right, we know what's going to happen in week three. Anyhow, we'll save that for then. Let's hope they turn things around this Sunday in San Francisco, and this Sunday afternoon, let's go Lions.